Welcome, welcome, welcome to Terrorvision Horror Podcast. Dan, what have you been doing? We've actually had a break, so
yeah,
we were meant to come back just after Christmas, but I needed a little bit of extra time, just mentally, physically. So it's been a while.
Yeah. I mean, we had Christmas and did all that crap, and I got the this week. I'm really excited because I got the new book by John Romero. So he's like the guy that got one of the guys who created Doom. He's written a book about his life story, and he has narrated it himself for the audiobook. So I bought the audiobook. I bought it, $30. Bang, I'm like, yeah, cool. I don't mind popping like some money out to the artist and stuff like that. Even though it is overseas money going anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Nah,
yeah,
audiobooks are okay. And been listening to that. Pretty cool. Like the guy's a crazy genius.
Yeah, you were telling me about some of that shit before. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Damn son.
He's basically a computer.
Yeah. He really is, right?
Yeah. And that's about it, really. Yeah. I've just been chugging along, doing my game and stuff like that. Had some breakthroughs with some coding stuff this week. And so my game really feels like a game now. Like, I finally got this mechanism where, because, like, it's basically a Binding of Isaac kind of clone. Not clone, but, like, that's my main inspiration.
Yeah.
But I wanted to do the thing, like Zelda as well. I wanted to do, like, it's like a dungeon where I wanted to go into a room and the room's locked and then you have to do whatever you have to do to get out each room. And I hadn't worked out the door mechanics. So doors are hard in games. Everyone thinks they're easy, but they can get hard, especially in my procedural generated one. And I didn't want my doors to be in certain spots all the time. So they're in random places. So I couldn't just, like, have the doors... Yeah, so it was just, I had to get a mate to help me out.
Yep.
Good old Tyler from Game Plus, he helped me out. Thanks, mate. And yeah, got that working and been doing that now. And that's it.
Chill.
It's just me. I'm just doing my normal thing. I'm making a game.
You're a busy guy, though.
You know, moving my shop.
Yeah.
Getting it and stuff like that.
Getting it all ready. I bought a puppy.
A poupée?
A poupée.
I knew that. I acted as if I didn't know.
Yeah.
What?
I found this little puppy. He was adorable.
I found
him on Facebook. Don't worry, I did buy him from a reputable breeder. I bought a little French bulldog. I've wanted one for years and years. But now that I finally own my own home, I'm working enough. I feel confident that I can be a good puppy owner. So
Papa mother.
Papa mum. I bought a little puppy. I've taken this last week off because I figured, look, it's never going to be a good time to get one.
No.
So I'm like,
there's never a good time to do anything. You just do it the first day you can.
Yep. So, we've had a really good first week together. So I got him last Friday. Would have been a couple of weeks ago now by the time this airs. But yeah, he's pretty good at potty training. He sleeps through the night. We both have our same, 3 a.m. pee schedule, so it kind of works out well.
Yeah.
I get up and pee. He goes out to pee. Our cat Pliskin has come out, and we think, because he doesn't have much of a sense of smell, so he's not really overwhelmed by all the puppy smell and all this, that, and the other.
Oh, yeah, what did the cat think?
He's indifferent. Like, he's not...
He's not arching his back and like... at the dog.
No, he's been pretty good. Like, we thought we were going to have a hell of a time with it, but... No, I mean, they still don't play together or anything like that, but...
They might later.
Yeah. Or you can tell he kind of really wants to. He'll play near him or he'll sit near him.
Or play near him and then look at it. The dog will look at the cat. Yeah. Good idea.
But he goes up to him and sniffs him like when he's in his crate or his playpen and stuff like that. So, yeah. That's what I've been doing. I'm freaking happy as shit.
Yeah, it's a pretty cute dog. It's pretty funny looking.
He's very cute.
It's one of those dogs that smiles like...
Yeah. He's got a face on him. He's cute. He's got little devil eyebrows as well. So, you look at him. But, yeah, good times. Anyway, welcome to episode 159 of Terrorvision Horror Podcast. This is our more relaxed fit episode. I'm one of your hosts, Jennifer Strand, and joining me is my favorite limb collector, Dan McGuinness.
Hello.
Hello. So coming off of last week's episode of Attack the Killer Tomatoes, I thought we could discuss culinary horror, food-based horror, that kind of thing. I really, really didn't want to – I really wanted to have it, like, focus purely on food, not so much anthropophagy, like cannibalism kind of thing.
Yeah, because, like – But that I mean, where does that end? When, like I was saying before, like, if you've got a crocodile movie that eats people – Is that food?
What's food for a crocodile?
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit today about food.
Yeah, because I wouldn't. Yeah, I tried to find my ones were actually about food.
Yeah,
and it's not. There's not heaps.
No,
there's heaps of ones where they're like, well, this movie has a scene that's about food.
And I have got a list as well of some really good food based horror scenes, which we can discuss as well.
But the ones that are primarily about food are far and few between.
A little bit, yes.
And especially because I have to have seen them to talk about them. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, so there's lots of films there. Or some of them, like, they're so, I haven't seen them so long that I couldn't.
Yeah, there was a couple in our mentions list that I was like, oh, fuck, that would have been really good to talk about. But I also feel that I haven't watched it in 20 plus years, so
yeah,
couldn't tell you. Now, while I was, you know, looking around, Adam Lowenstein, who is part of the University of Pittsburgh, he's actually one of the guys that does the George Romero kind of cultivating of all his works and whatnot. I pulled up a little quote that I found from him that was really good about this. So he says, eating is so fundamental to human experience and survival that when food is distributed unequally, you start to really get to this core issue in society. I think horror is very much attuned to that. And if human beings can't figure out a way to be fair to each other, horror will seek to equalize that dynamic. And it's not going to do it in any way that's pretty easy and digestible.
Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, would you like to kick us off with one of your first food-based horror films?
I'm going to start. These aren't in any order. No, they are. They're in order of what I want to speak to them about.
Yep.
So the first thing I'm going to do is Dumplings.
This is on my watch list.
From 2004. It is a Japanese film.
Mm-hmm.
I would call it the horror film. Terrific. Yeah. Directed by Fruit Chan. So even his name has to do with eating. He does a whole bunch of other, like, odd films and stuff like that. I don't know why. Yeah. Strange. Fruit Chan. That is a funny director's name. So it's if you don't know what it is, it's about a lady and she runs an abortion clinic. So straight away it's like in Japan. And the premise of the film basically is that, like, she gets the fetuses after she aborts them and makes them into dumplings, and then they work out that you get dumpling powers from them.
So it's kind of like stem cells, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like stem cell research, but, like, there's powers involved. Kind of, it's weird, hard to explain. And her and another woman are kind of, like, getting into this. And then, of course, like, one of them, the woman gets done for it.
Mm.
The main woman, and, like, goes down. Then she's like, well, now I don't have my fetuses to make dumplings out of because the abortionist is gone, and so my dumpling powers are fading. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
That's what the film's about. So it's So straight away, I forgot this was, well, I always remember this as being like a Takashi Miike film, but it's not, but it's got that vibe. So if you know his films, like, that's the kind of thing you're going to get into in this, but it's all about, like, and they fully show, like, them actually, like getting fetuses and going with a cleaver.
Yeah.
Cleaver, and it just shows them, like, cutting them up and stuff and making them into, ooh, like, and it's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Triggering. It would definitely be triggering for people because you got, like, especially for women in this film.
Yeah.
You got the abortion side to it and then all that. And then, like, you've got the, because I think at first they're, like, it, like, makes them young.
Yeah, I think the concept around it is, like, you know, eating these, again, like stem cells, you're eating it, it's regenerative, you know, so you'll look a little bit longer.
It's crazy that humans have this thing where they think the harder the food is to get, the more amazing things it does for you. That's why, like, the whale bile is, like, a massive thing. And I'm like, it's not, just because it's hard to get doesn't mean it does anything. Like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, it's a flower only growing at the top of the one Himalayan. And I'm like, yeah, so what? So what? Like, it doesn't mean, just because it's hard to get, that isn't like the prerequisite for magical powers or, you know, that kind of thing. Like, but it is a massive thing that people think that, like,
Rhinoceros horn kind of deal. Like, oh, that's
all that shit.
It's going to give you.
Yeah, because people are like, oh, it's hard to get as well. It's rare ivory. Therefore, other things that are hard to get are also rare. And if they're a medicine and they're rare, they must do better than normal medicine. What?
That's
basically just Chinese medicine.
You and your Chinese medicine.
But yeah, Dumplings, 2004. If you want to get into that, if you like a bit of like real squirmo.
Yeah.
It's not really a film I'd usually like, but I just did. I think it just caught me off guard when I watched it. I didn't know what it was. And like, I think I just saw it on like SBS or something like that.
So. It would have been one of those SBS films. And I know that it was up until maybe 3 or 4 years ago distributed by Madman as well. So it would have been really like easily accessible. It is actually looking into doing this episode. It popped up for me, and I've known about it just because we used to stock it at work, but I never actually watched it. But I mean, reading about it, I'm like, fuck, I kind of really want to watch that. So,
well, it's that kind of film where I'd be like, only if you wanted to watch a food based, you know what I mean? I wouldn't be like, dude, you got to see Dumplings.
Well, it's also taken from a short film out of what they call the Three Extremes kind of horror based stuff in Japan or China. So I'm really interested because, you know me, I like an extreme film and I like to, I'm weird.
The Three Extremes is that a film genre or a short film thing?
It's a short film thing, yeah.
Oh, maybe that's where I saw. Maybe I saw just the original of it.
Because it would have been a short little film before it was this. But I think they had the feature film done and then they cut it down to a shorter version. And then they re-released it, obviously, in its full entirety.
Maybe I did see. Maybe it was part... One of the Three Extremes. So that was a film called The Three Extremes.
Yeah.
Who did the other ones? I just wrote Three and Three Extremes came out.
Yeah.
2004? That's after.
Yeah. Because it was released in the same year.
Who are the filmmakers? Ah, Miike's one of the films in that.
There you go.
What one did he do? That's the real question. An anthology. Yeah, right. So that's probably where... I've probably only seen the short version because I probably watched The Three Extremes, which is the reason why I thought this was done by Miike.
Yeah.
And
that makes sense.
Because Miike did like the Eye show as well. Eye. And that was kind of gross.
All right. Well, the first one on my list is Dead Sushi. So again, I've gone for a Japanese title, 2012, directed by Noboru Iguchi. Basically, it's sort of about this girl who she's not a sushi master. Like, her dad is a sushi guy. Like, he can make all these kind of really good sushi, and she is just, she can't get on board with it. She's not fast enough. She's not dexterous enough.
She's trying.
Yeah, she's tried. And it turns out that a disgruntled researcher starts injecting his former employee's meals with a serum that turns sushi into flesh-eating monsters.
That's good.
So
that's all food. Film is.
So we essentially get all these really great sequences. This is a low-budget kind of film. It's very much on the same vein as, you know, the Tokyo Gore Police and the Robo Geisha films that I love so much. And it's essentially...
Oh, so it is a Japanese film.
Yeah, Japanese film. So this young girl, she goes and works in like a hotel where these people come to stay, and she's not very good at her job. She's just not good. But she now needs to survive with a bunch of other people as these sushi are attacking everyone across the board. So.
And it's not just like a little California roll attacking people. It's like they've just taken any form of sushi and just run with an idea.
Yep. Yeah,
like squids
so the idea is like it's regenerative, so it's bringing food back to life. So we get this really cute little egg sushi as well that sort of comes to
the
life.
Roe.
But it means no harm. Like it's scared of you, it recoils, and it just kind of wants to be loved. And, you know, so she understands that, okay, well, the sushi itself, like the fish, it wants to attack you. And then, of course, we get ridiculous sequences where, you know, you've got the squid that's been brought back to life, goes and starts like injecting all the other sushi that's in the room, and then all this stuff starts happening. It's like absolutely over the top. Yeah, we get that big fish man kind of sequence. It's over the top. It's ridiculous. Absolutely fantastic. And
is it done by the Tokyo Gore Police person, or is it just in the vein?
Same vein. I don't think, you know what? No, he's done Machine Girl.
Machine Girl was pretty out there.
He's done Robo Geisha, which is one of my favorites.
So it's that, yeah.
So yeah, that's that kind of thing. Yeah, he's got some weird things. Did he do Tokyo? Oh, he did Cat-Eyed Boy.
Yeah, right. Cat-Eyed Boy is a great one. as in like a good mango. I got it for sale at the moment at my shop.
Yeah, you do. So
Mutant we did the Girl Flowers Squad. Of Evil film. So that's a series done by, oh my God, I've lost it now. That's one of our big sellers. What's his name?
Oh, he did the live action movie for it, yeah.
Yeah. But what's the name of
a high school student steals the panties of a girl he likes but is witnessed, which sets off a chain of events that sends his life and the lives of others around him out of control.
It's basically the manga artist, Shozo Ashuzi or something like that. He just does these really morbid, like, character pieces. He did one called The Blood on the Tracks.
Yeah.
He did Flowers of Evil, which is basically just about abuse.
Mm.
And Blood on the Tracks is, like, terrifying. Eye Patch walks through the whole film, one of his whole pieces whole video just on Blood on the Tracks.
Okay, cool.
So those people who like those real kind of, like, unstable depression character pieces. Yeah, yeah. He's the king of it. He did another one we got called Poolside something or other, and it's just about a girl who's like a swimmer, and she gets into dudes shaving her like legs and pits, and then finds a dude who's into shaving girls' pits and legs and you know, that kind of thing, like really quirk, squirk. It's a squirk work, you know what I mean?
That but kind of thing.
It's some of it's very questionable as well, and like age limits and stuff, his work.
It always is, isn't it?
It always is.
Always is. But yeah, so this one is a lot of stupid fun.
Which is not that at all.
No, so this is, it's lighthearted, it's absolutely ridiculous, and you know what? It's streaming for free on Tubi.
Tubes.
You can go watch it right now.
Right now.
Like, go pause free. It. Go pause this episode. Go watch it. Come back.
And then
listen to what Dan's next episode is. Next movie.
My next pick is I'm going to go for. Now, this is not primarily all about food,
mm-hmm.
but I would say 50% of the film is about food.
Mm-hmm.
Is Crimes of the Future. Old fucking Cronenberg's film from 2022. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's right. I'm doing a 2022 film pick. Which means I can't really tell you what it's about because I don't like to spoil anything.
Sure.
Like this. But it does have a thing. You've written a little note for me here so I can.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like kind of about like, it's like humans are evolving to be able to eat plastic and other toxic materials because that's kind of we're just an evolution. There's this kickstart evolution of these people who have organs.
Yeah, they're growing new organs.
Organs to deal with plastics and stuff like that, which is pretty Cronenberg in itself. Set in a world where pain is gone. So physical pain is no longer in humans. And I can't remember if it's been bred out of us or we do something to stop it. I can't remember that part. So the idea, pain isn't feared anymore, and it follows like artists who do artistic autopsies.
Yep.
And it's about a guy, it's hard to explain, like it's a Cronenberg film, like it's like quickly explain Naked Lunch, how about I don't,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's out there, but like there were a couple of scenes I just wasn't happy with. I was just like, oh, that's got CG in it, and I feel like a Cronenberg film with some CG in it's stupid. Like he should never put CG in his films, and he's so good at like the practical effect. But it still was a very Cronenberg-y film.
Because a lot of it comes down to, because if we've got no pain, we can do whatever we want to our bodies,
which means that
like, you know, you start to get people who are doing a whole heap of body modification. Well, it's also
set in a world where like pain has been like solved, but also there's no disease anymore or anything. So you can't die if you get cut. You can't die of like infection or anything like that. So so that's like the premise of it, and it opens up this like idea of like, oh, well, what is, if there's no pain, there's also kind of no pleasure.
Yeah.
Or it melds in. So sex becomes very.
Yeah. It's so you're trying to find some like
a middle ground.
Somewhere to feel. Yeah. How to feel. And that and you're could
like,
be.
yeah, the main character is like an old dude who's like an art. He's like the world's most famous artist kind of thing, a troubled artist. And he sleeps in this like skin hyperbolic chamber made of like organs. It's fucking pretty Cronenberg, like.
Yeah.
Oh, so it kind of, lots of bits reminded me of Existence and stuff like that. And like, but I really, really enjoyed it. But the whole big premise of this thing is like, so I think originally like the people who are being bred to eat the plastic, they're like illegals. Like they, well, you're not allowed to.
They're evolving. So but, I think it's, we're trying to.
But the people who aren't evolving don't, like, are all the people in power, and they don't want them to be like.
Yeah.
And they don't admit, they kind of do the misinformation thing that these people aren't actually real, that they're putting in organs.
Mm.
Like, as in like it's not a natural thing, and the whole film is about.
Yeah. It's essentially trying to stop the next step of human evolution to be able to survive on what we have done to our own planet.
Yeah, but they're trying to stop
but
it.
But they're trying to kind of, yeah.
Stop it because they're fucking people. They're the government.
Yeah.
But it is done in a very Cronenberg way. It is very, it's very, he doesn't say that ever in the film. It's all just very convoluted and very arty. And there are some scenes that you just like, there's a whole plot point as well that just never gets solved in it as well.
I don't even remember what that is because I watched it. I wasn't in love with it.
He gets hired by like, do you remember, to be a secret agent and all that shit. And he just, nothing ever happens with it. But I think I just like those kind of, they're not think pieces. They're just pieces that where you, the story's there. It's just not spoon fed to you. And all those films that I love, like Videodrome, all his films, Videodrome, Naked Lunch, all the story's there.
Mm.
You just have to fucking do a bit of work to find. You have to rewatch it.
Yeah.
Like a film that makes you just have to rewatch it. Like, and it's not that it's not there. It's just that you've got to find it. And I like that kind of, and just make. A lot of the cult classics are that kind of thing now. Like they're the ones that you do have to rewatch them, and like to find out what was going on. And I know that sounds like bad filmmaking, but I mean, tried and tested, man. Like so many of those, like.
But everything is subjective. So like you can come out of watching that film with an idea, and I could come out with an idea, and they could be very different, and then we can have a conversation about it, and then from there, once you start talking about it, you're like, okay, but what if, and then it becomes a greater conversation.
Yeah.
And then from there, your ideas have expanded, my ideas have expanded, and then all of a sudden we're in a whole new area talking about a whole new
thing. It's weird because I only like two types of horror. Yeah. And I have a horror, but I like comedy horror, fun and ridiculous thing, and then I like the total swing of the pendulum. Yeah. And I like the ones where you have to watch them over and over again to find. And I don't read into things. As in, I mean, I don't read about things after I've watched them. I like to just go, this is my theory.
Yep.
And I think that's worse because, like, Braden, who I work with, has, like, a film podcast, and I'm always like, this was my theory. But, like, you know, they have their podcast, but I can tell that they've just read other people's, like, theories.
Yeah.
Because, like, people do that, and, other people's theories become their theories. But I just like to sit there and, like, percolate my own little
theories.
Work it
out for yourself. Yeah.
And I'm always, a lot of the time I'm wrong. And they're like, that's not what that was. And I'm like, oh, this is what I got out of it.
That's what you got out of it. And if you've left going, thinking about it for a couple of extra days and you got something completely different, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm. Like, but it is about, primarily a lot of the film is about this purple plastic that they eat. Like it's kind of like a, I don't know, I just wanted to eat it. Yeah. But I saw it and I was just like, what is that? Or why I can't taste that, but I need to.
Yeah.
But, like, the people who don't have these organs that eat it die.
Yeah.
So, like, but the people who eat the plastic can only eat the plastic.
Yeah, so they've evolved out of a position where they can eat normal foods. Like, this is what they have to
eat. Yeah, but the government has, like, made the plastic illegal, so they're basically, like, they're, like, plastic runners, like, terrorists to keep, like, their. So it's, you've got that whole, separation, racism kind of vibe going through it with all the whitest people in the world. Because it's a Cronenberg film. They're always like scandos and shit like that in his films. And I really liked it. And it was about food and I thought this is perfect to talk about. I mean, I did just talk about heaps of it then.
That's fine. But you didn't really give anything major away, so.
Well, it's kind of, like I said, like, it's hard to give something away of a film that it's a thing you have to, like, watch over and over again to understand. Like, I still haven't, like, don't understand it all. Mm. But you got some beautiful people in this film as well. Like the strange, what's her name? That young lady that's in it, that's in everything.
Kristen Stewart.
What?
Kristen Stewart.
Not him. The girl. The lady.
Kristen Stewart.
Oh, is that her name?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought, sorry.
The Twilight girl.
Is that her?
Yeah.
Is it?
Are we talking the main girl or the weird girl?
The weird girl. The one, I can't remember now.
No, that's all right. Because the other girl, the main girl that's in it, like her, Viggo Mortensen's lover and business art partner, she's actually one of the girls from Blue is the Warmest Color.
That's, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're talking about her?
Yeah, her. She's like a full scando looking woman.
Mm, yeah.
Her name's Leah Sadox. Yeah, Blue is the Warmest Color. Whew.
Yeah, no.
That
no,
film.
Don't.
If you want to, I don't know. That is.
If you want to not watch that film, I recommend that.
Do you not like it?
No.
Why not? It's pretty fucking full on.
Yeah, and it's not.
Realistic?
Realistic. And the biggest, it
might be to lipstick lesbians.
No.
No?
No.
Doesn't work like that?
No.
It does have real sex in it though, which is crazy. And I'm pretty sure they're like 16 and 15, the girls in it as well. Yeah. Which is like, whoa.
It's not a film that we support.
No.
But yeah. Well, I will move on to mine. And you know what you can't get enough of? That wonderful stuff. The Stuff, 1985, directed by Larry Cohen.
The Stuff.
Ah, yes. I can't believe you haven't watched The Stuff yet. We're going to have to do it as an episode.
To me, it was always like one of those things. I've got my rules of horror. And to me, it just looked like it wasn't going to have the kind of violence I liked in it.
Well, you are wrong.
Well, am I now?
We've got some really great violence in this. So basically,
yeah, I know. I'm probably wrong, but like, I just thought it was like, just didn't look like
it. No, just it didn't look like it was a Dan film.
It just didn't look very horror when I was a kid. It was just like,
that's fine.
It probably is.
It's really good. So basically, there is this new dessert product that is blowing ice cream sales out of the water. Nobody knows how it's made, what's in it, but people are lining up to buy it, and it's got basically, you know, you can't get enough. People just keep coming back for more, We're using it for, they're using it for like consumer, like marketing, advertising, like it's all about the stuff, like all this stuff. Again, it's like a 1985 film, so it's almost 40 years old.
But it's doing the same thing as Killer Tomatoes.
It's doing the same thing as Killer Tomatoes. It's like having this like
commentary on consumerism.
We don't know where it's coming. It's like the Poplar episode of freaking Futurama, where we don't know where they are, but they're absolutely delicious. Turns out they're babies. They're like little alien babies that people are eating. You know, pop a poplar in your mouth because you've got the good jingle, you've got the good everything surrounding it. People are going to want to eat it. People aren't going to question where this thing is coming from. You know, we're becoming desensitized. We're becoming hypnotized by all this advertising happening for this thing. And we're not questioning how it's made, where it's coming from.
What does it do to you? I'm looking at all these pictures from it, and do you melt and then stuff comes out of you?
Comes out of you. Yeah.
There's like a shot of an African-American that keeps coming up.
Yeah. Well, and this is the great thing as well. The special effects that's used in it. I can't remember who did the special effects. Brett Klukulpepper? I can't remember.
Klukulpepper.
But yeah, so we get some really cool sequences. And it's basically just a film about marshmallow fluff attacking everyone.
Do you remember when they made fluff?
Yeah, I remember fluff. Can't eat it. It's too full of sugar. Too much sugar.
That is true.
But yes, I mean, this is a fun film. It's a bright film. We've got everything you want. Then you've got people who are against the stuff. So it becomes an underground espionage film to try and like get it out and tell people that this stuff is not good for you and that kind of thing. But it's a lot of fun.
I'm just watching the scene now with that guy's head.
Yeah. How good does it look?
And the stuff comes out of his mouth.
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And the kid just walks in. And then there's just like, it's good up to a certain point. And then it jumps the shark.
Nah, never. Not once does it jump any sharks.
It's kind of like The Blob.
Yeah.
But not as cool as The Blob.
I'm pretty certain they came out around the same time.
Really?
I think so. The Stuff was 1985. The Blob, I want to say, was 1985. Did you see they're remaking The Blob?
Are they?
Yep.
Who?
The Hellraiser director? The new Hellraiser.
Yeah, right. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. Oh, The Blob, 1988. So the stuff came first.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is surprising. But I mean remaking The Blob. I mean, I love The Blob because it's like the practical effect, one of the practical effect kings.
Yeah.
Like, as in every scene has a big practical effect idea in it, and like so much of it looks good.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And I don't know. Like, to me, as soon as you said remake The Blob, I was just like, well, I'm not going to care about a CG blob.
No.
Do you know what I mean? I don't care about CG.
No, no, you don't. I'm really hoping that they do use the practicals because, you know, you've got people.
Because why would you remake it if you're not going to try and outdo the practical effects of the first one? Like, that would seem to be the point of it. And like the films that are getting the most amount of like stuff that people like are the ones that are going away from the CG. Like, people want to see that like realness again. And we're at a point where we can just see if something's CG and you totally write it off, like the fucking latest Fast and the Furious film. Like, you don't care. All the crashes, I don't think any cars crashed in that film in real life.
Well, that's dumb.
Like, it's just all CG, and it looks bad CG as well. I'm like, how did this get through? It's like Fast 7 is like I think it's in the top, like, most amount of money movies made ever.
Yep.
It made the most amount of money. Like, how can they just have bad CG? Just go Fast 5 again. Everything's destruction in that film. You know, they want to drive a car through a building, they drive a car through a building. They want to have a building fall down, they destroy a building. You know what I mean? Like, they want to drag a giant safe through the city, they drag a giant safe through the city and smash it into cars. I know. Fucking hell.
Fucking hell.
I'm turning into crotchety. I'm going all fucking John Carpenter on you.
I'm okay with that. I like a crotchety old man. Because I am, in myself, a crotchety old man. What's next on your list?
I have to get back to it. My next one is 1987's Bad Taste.
Ah.
Which is Peter Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Jackson's early films. Could it be his first actual film, or did Meet the Feebles come before that? No, I reckon it'd be can you look it up?
I'll look it up. You talk about the...
Yeah, I don't know, because I can't think of anything that Peter Jackson did before Bad Taste, but it might just be I watched stuff out of order. And Bad Taste, Peter Jackson, you know him from things like, you know, Lord of the Rings and shit like that. He started off being a horror dude. He did two of my favourite horrors. He did Brain Dead, which is easily one of my favorite horrors. And then earlier on, he did Bad Taste, which is kind of like the precursor to Brain Dead, him working out. He plays one of the roles in it. He plays Derek. And because it's, you know, it's New Zealand, it's fucking hard New Zealand accents. It's set.
Bad Taste was first.
His first kind of thing.
Yeah, 1987. Brain Dead was 92.
Oh, yeah. I know Brain Dead was like, but I thought he might have done something other than that in there that I just don't know about. Nah. But anyhow.
Feebles was 89.
Have you seen that film?
Not for a long time.
It's so brutal. It's so like I just don't like watching it. It's too gross.
No, that's alright.
So Bad Taste, if you don't know what it is, it's set in a little like town, like cliffside shore town somewhere.
New Zealand,
yeah, but I'm somewhere in New Zealand. I don't know where. And a government agency is sent there because there is weird stuff happening in this town. And they work out that there is a whole bunch of zombies in it. And their organization is hilarious. These are just like bearded dudes. One of them is a young Peter Jackson. And he's like the scientist dude. And there is jokes in this film. There's violence, as much violence as they could possibly budget into it, which I loved it. And like, you know, gross shit. Like, you know, dudes like, there'll be like a zombie, but they're not zombies. They're kind of just mad people. They're all dressed in like the baddies are just dressed in like with those blue fucking mechanic uniforms.
Yeah.
What are they? You know, those onesies.
Yeah.
So they're the baddies, but they're not like zombies. Like, ooh, they're just dudes. And Yeah, these guys, they've been told that they're the boys that you call in. You know what I mean? When shit goes down, you call the boys. And actually, I think they say that at the start. Send in the boys.
The boys.
And the guy presses a button to send them in, and he doesn't press it with his finger. He has a stick with a finger on it, but he presses the button. just shit like that. So it's a comedy. It's a massive comedy horror, but it's like as violent as they could make it. There's actually some funny bits. The bit where like Peter Jackson's character falls down the cliff.
Yeah.
And they just throw this dummy down there, and it's this huge cliff, and he just keeps rolling down, and it's just shit like that. And then when he hits the ground, buckets of blood are thrown in from the side. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, it's just a great film. And the reason I'm pulling into being food is that, like, in the end, they're not zombies. They're aliens that have come down, and human flesh has become an international, like, they own a fast food chain, and human flesh is the greatest sensation at the moment. So they're there killing and boxing up humans, and it's all just about this, like, and then there's this whole scene of, like, how they eat the food, and it's just, like, they, like, the guys go out, the zombies, and, like, eat the things, and they re-vomit it back up, and then they all eat out, they drink this vomit out of a bowl, and it's just, like, it's just like Peter Jackson. If you've seen Braindead, like, it's like, you know, the dinner scene. He's just trying to make a fucking...
It's like a gross out thing.
Yeah, actually, and it's funny to them. You can imagine them fucking pissing themselves when they're making it.
Yep. That's one to add to our scene sequence. That custard...
Oh, the bit where they're like drinking the vomit.
Yeah.
And he's like, he drinks the bowl of vomit. He goes, aren't I lucky? I got a chunky bit. And like shit like that. And because he sneaks in like the good guy, and he doesn't realize what he has to do. And he's like, he realizes he's standing there in disguise, and there's this vomit coming down. He's like he's going to have to eat it. And he's like, keeps moving down the line to get away from it. And then he's at the end, and he's like, he eats it.
Yeah.
And then like you think he's going to be gross. He goes, anyway, he did it a bit more, and then he comes back in, and there's a line. I fucking loved a band called Blood Duster when I was growing up.
Yeah,
you know Blood Duster, and there's a sample from it, and he goes like, "Oh, you never could believe what I just had to do." And he goes, "Did you have to drink some chuck?" And I just remember that was like the sample at the start of a Blood Duster song. Yeah. But yeah, and just lines like that, and they're just—it's worth watching. It's kind of like the bad, same badness as Killer Tomatoes in quality, but like
you can see I'd be saying that he's influenced by that for sure.
Imagine Killer Tomatoes had like high end violence in it.
Oh yeah,
it could have been like people would have loved it. But then it wouldn't have got a big cinema release.
No,
like children can watch that film. There's nothing in that film. There's no nudity. Like, there's no swearing, and there's no gore.
Yeah,
it's just stupidity.
Yep.
Where they could not watch Bad Taste. Bad Taste is like, if you remember it from when you're a kid, like seeing it in the movie, in the video shop, it's like just got one of the aliens on the front with a fucking M16 rifle.
Yep.
And like just giving the finger to like the camera. Like, yep. And the aliens are these big full prosthetic, like hilarious things. So like, you can see like straight away that Peter Jackson had his shit together. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, shit.
Even in his first film, this is like, for this to be your first film, like, you're like, yeah, you're going to go fight. It's the same as like Evil Dead.
I would Raimi. Love to see him return to
horror,
but like,
well, he did
practical horror.
Yeah, because he did Drag Me to Hell. Is that him? No, that was Raimi.
That was Raimi.
Well, he did do a horror though, didn't he? Recently, Peter Jackson. Oh, he did The Frighteners.
Well, that was 1996, so that wasn't really recent.
But that was that was the opposite of Swing of the Pendulum. That was all CG.
Yeah.
Like there were, but he was like, you feel like he was like, that was him getting into CG, and then like the precursor to how the Lord of the Rings films ended up like being a massive CG mess.
Hmm.
They look all right, though.
It'd be good to see him return, because like, I mean,
Lord of the Rings still look pretty good, don't they? They don't look bad. He knew how to cover it up really well.
Yeah, well, it's the integration of the two, like practical and
yeah, nothing beats Del Toro?
Yeah.
Nothing beats him for integration of CG and practical effects. That dude is the king of it.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at Pan's Labyrinth and you look at fucking the Hellboy films, even like his Alien film, which no one likes, which I still like.
Which one was that?
Resurrection. The one where there's all these like, it's got all the same like actors in it that uses, like in one of the other food films, Delicatessen. Which we have on our mentions, which I'll mention now because we're talking about the snack. Like, yeah, which is like so long ago that I can't remember.
Yeah, I would have loved to have...
That and City of Lost Children, I cannot remember. And I get them both confused.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
The Delicatessen is a very horror-y kind of like...
It's up there. It's definitely an infinity one. So.
Bad Taste is my second to last one.
Yep.
I love it. It's stupid. It's not 100% about eating, but it is a lot about...
Well, the concept is like this, you know, this alien race has infiltrated... Because they are wanting to make human flesh the next big taste. Like,
yeah, you know, it is very much about, yeah.
They're there to steal us, to eat us.
Yep.
So, yeah, no, I'll go with it. Well, the next one on my list is Attack of the Killer Donuts.
What?
Oh, yes. So this charming film from 2016 directed by Scott Wheeler. So once again, another chemical accident turns ordinary donuts into bloodthirsty killers. It's up to a small group of people to save their sleepy town from killer donuts. It is exactly what you think it is. It looks exactly like you would think
it looks exactly like killer condoms.
And it does look exactly like killer condoms.
I didn't know they even look like they've got the same teeth.
They do, actually,
yeah.
Well, because they're little round things with little terrible teeth.
And it's got the same cover of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, like the same like cartoon drawing, exactly. Same. So it's a homage.
Yeah.
Wow, that's weird because it's a homage of a film which was primarily a homage of everything
other
else.
Things. Yeah, so, you know, and I mean, Scott Wheeler went on to direct such glorious films as Avalanche Sharks and a film called MILF. So he's clearly doing super well for himself. As I say that, who I've not directed
didn't
a single
do,
film in my life.
Didn't he do Shark Exorcist as well?
Did he?
Is that him?
I don't think so. He's also done Celebrity Sex Tape. And right. Martian Land? Mm-hmm. Oh, Sinkhole.
Can the donuts fly? There's a lot of shots I'm looking at on the... And they're just, like, in the shots?
It's essentially,
or they
like,
just throw heaps
people
of donuts.
Are throwing donuts. And
oh, really?
It's about as tragic as Killer Tomatoes, which is part of its absolute charm. And also, it makes me want to eat donuts every time.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I do like donuts. Like, but I'm really what is it? I only like certain donuts.
I fucking love donuts.
But I don't like too much. I just like the donut, like the simplest donut possible. Like if I get a chocolate donut,
yeah,
I pull the chocolate off and just eat the donut.
Do you know, like, what? Look, there is nothing better than just a plain cinnamon. I mean, hot cinnamon donuts from the Royal Show.
I like hot cinnamon donuts, but I don't like them putting in the cinnamon. I ask them to do it before I get them, just like without the cinnamon on them.
Yeah, okay.
Because the bun to me is sweet enough.
Yeah.
And then, like, putting cinnamon on it just, like, takes away from all, like, the awesomeness of the fucking dough, which I just deep-fried, motherfucker.
Yeah, there is nothing better than just a plain donut, like...
Because, like, the ones that... The glazed donuts are the ones that everyone loved. And they had that glaze on it that was, like, done with so much butter. The butter counteracts, like, the sweetness. So you think it doesn't taste sweet. So that's why people, I think, liked them. Because they just tasted like they weren't super sweet. But they were, motherfucker. They were, like, sweeter than anything. They had, like, a layer of sugar, not just, like, sprinkled on them.
Yeah.
It was completely covered. But, like, yeah, when you add so much butter and oil to something, it's kind of like, you go, oh, it's not that sweet.
Yeah. Oh, I love donuts. Oh, man, I could eat a donut right now. I'm not allowed to eat donuts right now, but I could eat a donut right now.
Also, you don't have any.
Even going to, like, Woolies and just getting their, like, $3 bag of cinnamon donuts.
Oh, fucking dunga nuts.
That is just as good as eating a freaking... any other donut. Because every time you get a Balfour's donut, it's stale. Every time.
Unless you get them, like, real, like...
I'm pretty certain
we used to go
stale.
To, like, you know, what's the place that was open all night?
Cafe de Villiers?
No, the O'Connell Street one.
Yeah, O'Connell Street Bakery.
Yeah, and they would have the giant ones, the giant vegan ones. Do you remember them?
I don't remember the giant vegan ones.
They're this
ones.
Big.
I remember the giant donuts because the drinks...
They weren't a comical. They weren't like a cake size. They were just like this big, but they were vegan as well. So like all of my vegan friends, that's how I found out about them.
Yeah.
And they're open all night. So I used to go get one of them. This is our vegan. They were still soft and nice, but they were always good, those ones from that place. They were always soft because they just like, I don't know. Maybe there's heaps of preservatives in vegan donuts. I don't know.
Quite possibly. Fuck, I could eat any donut right now. Please, continue. What is your last film? Because I'm going to talk too much about donuts.
Yeah, I'm drawing. So my last film is like what I think is one of the most quintessential food horrors. Mm-hmm. Which is also from 2022, is The Menu. I
fucking love this film.
Yeah. like, it's kind of a film where I shouldn't talk about it because it is one of those ones that I watched it blind and mm-hmm. that's what made it interesting.
Yeah.
But then again, you're going to know that you're watching a horror where you don't know you're watching a horror the first because it's not branded as a horror.
No.
It's branded as like a restaurant movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in no way do you think it's a horror up until a certain point, like until quite far into the film as well.
Mm.
So that it's got like, it's almost got a Dusk Till Dawn twist in it, if you would, where it just changes the aesthetic of the entire film, which I love. It has a whole bunch of like, good actors in it. It's got Renfield.
Yep.
What's his name? I don't know their real names, these people.
Oh, well, it's got Anya Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, the lizard lady. The lady's eyes, that actress who's like, went, she blew up in 2022. She was in everything.
Because she was in The Witch.
Her eyes are too far apart and they look in different directions, so she looks like a lizard to me.
Yeah, that's fair.
A good-looking lizard.
Yeah, oh, she's very beautiful. Ralph Fiennes is in it. You've got John Leguizamo's in it. What is his name? It's Nick.
Who? Which person?
The Renfield kid.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know anyone's name ever in any film. And I've got a podcast about films and I can never remember anyone's name. His name's Nicholas Holt.
Thank you. I was literally drawing a blank. And he is fantastic. He's doing fantastic things.
Janet McTeer.
Who's that?
She's like, she always plays like hard women. She's like, as in like, she's the lady who's in the middle of the room. She's like the...
She's the restaurant critic?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she always plays. And I always get her confused with that actress lady who plays the lesbian coach.
Jane Lynch.
Yeah, I always get them confused because they've got the same kind of like build. They've got the same,
Amazon women. But what I love about the menu, so the concept of the menu is like this, it is a restaurant, it is on an island, the only way you can get to it is via boat, and it is fucking expensive. So this is meant to be a once in a lifetime kind of dining experience.
These are the things, so like, if you've watched The Bear. I haven't
because people kept telling me how stressful it is.
That's
and
fucking wicked.
I need
it's
a little less
stressful
stress.
Though because you don't get stressed. There are some episodes, but like it is.
I watch shows about retail and get stressed.
Yeah, nah, but anyhow, The Bear, like, so there are, they do good examples in that of these, like, high-end restaurants that are so high-end that they, to go there, you have to make an advanced booking, which gives them time to research your life.
Mm.
And this is real life. So they research your life, they work out all, they go through all your social media, they go through information they can about you, they find everything they can about you. They create food for you when you're there. They try and find childhood memories that where you're eating, like, you know, something that they can bring out. They go fucking crazy. Mm. So this is a culinary world, but there is that world out there. So the menu isn't super far-fetched in that thing where he does kind of the same thing where and they play on that.
Yeah.
They play on these restaurants that are so high-end in their gastronomy, and they're like, it's not just the food they're serving, it's also who they're serving it to.
Yeah.
As in, they need to know these people and stuff like that. And it just goes into that and basically like crosses it into like, what if this was a cult? It's like to get to the restaurant, you have to go to this island, and like, it's basically. The head chef is basically the cult leader, and it's just fucking wicked.
So all the wait staff live on the island. All the sous chefs live on the island. Everyone lives on the island. Everything they do is all the food is grown, all the produce, everything is on the island. They don't bring anything in. So, you know, you'll see someone out in the ocean collecting scallops or whatever.
Yeah, they have like their own animals and farms and stuff. Yeah,
so, and it's just full on. So the idea of this...
But it's good because it's got like real, like, you know, it's got real food theory in it, like, which is nice and cool. And I like, but then I always like love the idea of like learning about food theory and like thinking about it, getting some books and never doing it.
Yeah.
And that, and they basically just fucking pay me out in that film at one point. Like, I'm like, I feel attacked. I'm that guy they're talking about. Like the guy who's like just thought thinks learning some recipes and that makes him a better person.
Yeah.
And I did. I went to the point of learning certain recipes as I was younger that I could always bring out. My dish that I always loved, which I stole off of Jamie Oliver,
yeah,
is like you get a chicken you stuff it with lemons, and then you make bread, and you wrap the whole chicken in the bread, and you cook it. So, like, when it comes out of the oven, it's just a giant loaf of bread that you keep like that, and when you bring it out, you put it on the table, and you rip it open, and the new bread and the chicken smell, this chicken has been basting in its own juices. It's been caught in the bread with its onion. It just makes this super tender chicken that's beautiful. But then you have these chunks of bread on one side. It's like all cooked on the outside, but it's been like chicken juice, like basting in the oil. And it's...
Get fucked.
And it's crazy easy.
Absolutely.
It's crazy
fucked.
Easy to do that. You just get the chicken, you just put the lemon that you just put, because you wrap it in, like, you stuff it with garlic and, like, you know, everything. And then you just make this easy bread. You wrap it in, and it's so easy, and you can't fuck it up.
Get all the way fucked. I want to eat that so bad.
Yeah. And, like, I used to serve that to people and blow their minds, because it's like, it was like a culinary experience that they never think, and they didn't know what it was.
It just
looks like a big fucking bit of half-assed burnt bread coming out of the thing, because it blacks up around as well, so you get that damper vibe.
Damper.
You pull it open, and all the fucking smells and juices. And that was my thing. And, you know, I impressed people with that. I may have even impressed women to sleep with me.
Yeah.
Like, as in, you know, as in, like...
I mean, that's
trying
fair,
to, like, woo them like this. And so to me, to them, it looked like I was some fucking cooking genius. So cooking is a powerful fucking, like, thing to have if you want to impress the opposite sex.
If you're
a man and you can just fucking pull out, fuck, and you know about... Like, my mate... who's good at fucking everything, he fully got into gastronomy, like, but he, like, went hard on this shit. Like, you go to his house and he has, like his pantry is, like, powders of, like, they look like, it just looks like a lab.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's, like, all these, like, things, I don't know what they are. But he got into it.
Yeah.
And I've been to, like, Key in, like, Melbourne, which is one of those, like, high-end, like, Keys in the fucking opera house, basically.
So. Yeah.
And I love it. And it's one of the Keys got great, one of the high-end restaurants, because, like, you don't even have to, haven't changed their decor since, like, the 70s.
Amazing.
So it's got bright purple carpet, and it's still, but it would have been high-end at one stage.
Yeah.
Look, but now it's just, would have turned gross, and now, then it went kitsch, and now it's just kind of retro.
Yeah.
Like, it's gone through, like, seven stages, and they just haven't changed it and don't care.
Yeah, that's fine.
Kind of like Mount Lofty House, except their food isn't good. And, sorry, Mount Lofty House thing. Windy Point, sorry.
Windy
not
Point,
Mount Lofty House is heaps nice.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, Mount Lofty House.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do consider myself, like, I like food. I fucking love food. Yeah. I've always loved food, but I know nothing about food. I know a bit, and I know what I like.
But that's what's fantastic about this film.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember where I was going with this. Yeah. No, it paid me out.
Because, I mean, that's the thing. So, like, it's all about the new experiences. So, like, what I like about traveling with when we used to travel for conventions with Will, was Will's big into food. So we'll go somewhere and we will eat good food. Whereas, like, I would be a little bit more like Anya Taylor-Joy's character, in which she's like, what the fuck is... So, okay, you've served me one singular piece of lettuce on a rock.
I love that shit.
And
I mean,
I can understand, and I would love to experience and try that thing, but what the fuck is this? I'm hungry. What is your... And I'm like the Charlie Day standing there eating spaghetti out of a Ziploc bag, asking, what's your spaghetti policy?
What's your spaghetti? Yeah. The degustation. Good degustation, you never leave feeling hungry.
Mm.
Like, I first time I experienced degustation, it fucking blew my mind. The idea that you get, like, 20 tiny meals of, like, and that meal is like, that is like the pinnacle point of the taste of a meal, like the best part of it, all the conglomerated into basically one spoon of it, but you eat a bit more, some of them are a little bit bigger than others, but you eat such a the good ones, you eat such a well balanced version of every kind of, like, protein and stuff like that, but by the end you are 100% satisfied. You're not full, and you don't feel overfull. You are just like, I have had everything.
Yeah.
And I'm not full, and I feel happy.
I'm sorry. The meal is not over when I'm full. The meal is over when I hate myself. Like,
Louis C.K.
said that, and it's fucking accurate.
You don't get that in good degustation. I've had some bad degustation where, like, there was still three courses to go, and I was full.
Mm.
And then their last three courses were, like, the proteins.
Oh.
Like, and they brought out the pork and that. And I was just like, I don't want it. And like, yeah, you, and I've just paid like $700 for this meal and I just think you're shit.
Yeah.
But everyone's like, it's the fucking best meal ever. And I'm like, no, no. Like, and this, yeah, is me being that guy that they fucking hate in this thing. Like, I'm like, no, but you shouldn't go to a DL station and come and like not be able to eat the last couple of meals because you're too full and from the service they gave you.
Yeah. Well, we did that. We went to Africola not too long ago, which was, the food was amazing. I got sick after it, but that I get sick with everything. The food was amazing. But by the time like the, and you know, they kept coming out with stuff and we're like, there's more. And then the realization kicked in. Like, we're all sitting there. We're full. We're like, we, yeah, can't eat all this food. And then like, and dessert. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, no, your dessert has to be part of it. It has to still be, you have to, because then by that end, you've had like, you still want that taste because you haven't, yeah, had it. Anyway, that's me wanking on. I sound like a fucking idiot, but like, I've been, you know me, I fucking live to eat shit, eh?
Yes.
Like, I will eat anything. I've eaten fucking tarantulas. Yes. I've eaten like everything apart, yeah, from, and the worst food in the world, without a doubt, is okra.
Sure.
Raw okra,
okay,
it's so gross.
Yep,
it's like a vegetable that has other humans' phlegm inside of it. Do you know what it is?
No, I know. I like. I know that it's like a pudding.
No, okra is like a it's like a cucumbery kind of thing.
Is it? I thought it was a pudding. Or am I thinking of tapioca? I'm thinking of tapioca.
Tapioca is fucking awesome.
I've never had
it. Oh man, I used to wake it all the time.
Yeah.
So it's sago. So it's basically got the, it's got the pearls in it from bubble tea, but they're tiny in custard.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
kind of. That's,
yeah,
like, okay, a loose term.
Okay. But this is the great,
don't
thing,
don't get
about
me started about talking about food.
Okay. But this is the thing about the menu. So it's sitting there and it's, it, people, it's
sitting there.
People like you are walking and going, I know this. Like, I can relate to this. But then you're like, also people like that. I mean, these people are awful one percenters who are not appreciative of the food. They're just eating there.
They're not
there
one percenters.
Because they're just eating there because
they're like 3%ers.
That's the thing you do. That's how you have clout at the freaking country club. And then,
yeah,
you,
yeah, yeah.
But and then also you get Anya Taylor-Joy character coming through. She's not from that kind of same area and she,
no, because she's there by mistake kind of thing. Yeah. Well, not by, she's a ring and what. But yeah, that's part of the story. But I do like the part of the story that every kind of meal that comes out, it kind of reveals the backstory of a certain character and shit like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what filmmaking? Like,
yeah,
oh, God. And then you've got like the kind of like the fucking awesome James Tynion kind of like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Why is this happening? These certain events in this film. And I'm like,
yep.
Get, who did it? Like, who, what have they done? Mark Mylod. What have you done, Mark Mylod? He's a good looking aging man. Aging man.
Yep.
He has done. Oh, he's the dude who made Ali G.
Oh, fuck off.
Oh, apparently. Oh, no, he might just be in. Oh, he might be an actor. Is he an actor as well? Wait up. Wait up. Wait. What the fuck?
Shut the front fuck door.
Oh, no, he's just a director and an executive producer. So he's just done a whole bunch. Looks like he'd just done mostly television and some rom-coms and then just pulled out the menu.
Fucking. And the menu has a great soundtrack as well. Let me just tell you, great soundtrack.
Yeah, this is kind of like, in my opinion, this is Nelly's first film. Like, if you don't count What's Your Number from 2011 or The Big White from 2005, which I've never heard of.
I don't count those. He's made one film and it's The Menu.
Or The New Sofa from 2008.
No.
Which may not even be a film. Anyhow, I'm sure he's done more than that. I don't know.
All right. Well, the last film on my list is Soylent Green.
The fucking, the king, actually that is more the king of the food films.
So 1973, directed by Richard Fleischer. So this is not a too distant future kind of film, but it,
yeah,
is.
When is it set now? Is it like, have we passed it?
I think we've passed it. We've passed Soylent Green. I want to say it was 2015, but that might be Back to the Future too. So basically, you know, it is an overpopulated futuristic Earth, and a guy gets a government agent sort of gets too close to a whole sort of bizarre secret involving the origins of a revolutionary and very much needed new food source. So this is an area where, like, you know you're rich if you can eat a carrot. And we're not talking like a giant carrot. We're talking like something that's probably half rotted in the garbage.
The rich people, yeah.
But that's rich. That's, you can afford actual food, whereas everyone else is surviving on Soylent Green.
Set in 2022.
Fuck. So yeah, we have passed it.
It's set in the year that crimes of the one that I just talked about.
The menu.
No, the other one.
Crimes of the Future.
Crimes of the Future came out, and it's kind of like the food in that, the plushie, is very kind of Soylent Green vibed as well. I'm sure it has nothing to do with that. Or maybe Cronenberg like loves Soylent Green and he like took that vibe and he did it on the year that it was set in.
Yeah, maybe. But this is the thing. So, you know, the film stars Charlton Heston. We all know Charlton Heston. This is a really sort of good insight into like where everything's going. Like it's overheated. It's overpopulated. Everyone's dying. What are you going to do? How are we going to get around the homelessness problem? How are we going to get around the fact that no one has food? I can spoil the shit.
There is one thing that we can always rely on, that society's never going to fall apart because the rich need society to make themselves feel rich and they will do everything they can to maintain society and like so that it's always chugging along because if society breaks down, they don't have anything to feel good about.
Yeah.
Like, so that is the one thing we can always... Like,
well, that's what we said at the beginning. It's the equalizer, food and horror. It's the great equalizer. We all have to eat. We all have to shit. We all have to die. All these things. I don't think we're too far off of Soylent Green.
Oh, yeah, we've got heaps of food.
We do have heaps of food. But
well, do we?
Yeah.
Now, well, that toilet paper we didn't have for a while.
Oh, that's true. Well, we are going down the bug route. People are starting to learn that. Some insects. Well, yeah, we're starting to
high in protein. Yeah,
yeah, we're starting to bring that into.
I've got jam inside, which has ants in it.
Interesting.
Ant jam, like actual just ants, like
they're, not just the ants got into the jam.
No, like they like what the Queensland ants are they're all through the jam and like you can eat. I'll give you some on the way out if you want.
I can't have it; it's too full of sugar.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, but thank you.
That's why I don't have it either. I bought it at the Adelaide show.
Yeah. I
ate all the other jams though. Kwandong. Ooh, I love a Kwandong jam.
Oh man, jam. Fuck, stop talking about food. Why did I choose this episode? I'm hungry.
Stop talking about food in our culinary episode. All right.
Oh my god. No. All right. So that kicks off like my last film. So let's jump.
There's a whole bunch of films when you think about it where like it's about food and then it's people. Isn't that like
That's literally Soylent Green.
Yeah, I know. But like that's what I'm saying. But there's a whole bunch of them. Like, isn't that like Snowpiercer's about that as well? Like the train. It's they find it's all about like.
Yeah, that was me screaming for like 3 months about Captain America eating babies. But yeah, like you know, there's lots of dystopian future films where you know the food source has to become people. I've been listening.
It's pretty much like a perfect like solution as well. Too many people.
Kinda.
Eat them.
Yeah. Why not?
Oh, do you know what we didn't put in here? Ravenous. That fucking horror movie about where set in the snow things and the snowy mountains or whatever and the they get lost and we've also done Cannibal the Musical.
Yep.
But like Ravenous was like a big film and like you get powers from eating people and like they work it out because they have to eat one person and they get obsessed with it. It's basically the story of Cannibal the Musical that they were riffing on.
Because I really wanted to avoid cannibalism.
I know.
In this episode, because then we could have gone into something.
I mean, there's so many cannibal films.
There's so many cannibal films. Like we're still fine.
Cannibal Holocaust, your favorite?
Yeah, I love that film.
I've watched it once. I thought it was rubbish.
you can get a cut now that has cut out all the animal stuff,
which is weird though, because like that is like going against everything fundamentally I think about films, but also I would prefer that.
Yeah. Well.
Do you know what I mean? There's a kookaburra out in the window.
Is it sitting on the old gum tree?
Sitting on the old wood fence.
Yeah, I love it. We did hear it before. But yeah, let's kick off a couple of memorable food scenes. So, I mean, obviously there are films that aren't, you know, focused purely on food and whatnot, but there are films that have really good food sequences. So one that's off the top of my head, it's not off the top of my head, I've got a fucking list in front of me. the pop rock scene in Urban Legend. Have you seen Urban Legend? I know someone who recently watched it for the very first time, so they'll know what I'm talking about. So they're in their Urban Legend class at university, and it's, you know, he calls a girl up to the front and he's like, oh, you know, have some prop rocks. She's like, great, not a problem. And he automatically offers her a Pepsi to wash it down with. And she steps back. She's no. Because you've heard the rumor that if you eat pop rocks and mix it with soda, your stomach's going to explode.
Yeah.
That was a thing. That
could that happen? Because, well, what about like that was Mentos? Is that the thing that they used to mix with the Coke? And,
yeah.
And what if you just swallowed heaps of them and scalded heaps of Coke? You'd probably just vomit.
Probably.
It'd probably just come up.
Yeah.
But it would froth up so big in your stomach.
Yeah. So, of course, she doesn't want to do it. Joshua Jackson's character, he comes up and he's like, I'll do it, not a problem. So he takes his little pop rocks, he drinks his little bit of soda. And, you know, the lecturer, played by Robert Englund, is there. He's like, see, nothing happens. And then, of course, he starts convulsing. He's on the ground. He's spitting it up. He's dying. Just turns out he was joking the whole time. But we remember that scene in that film.
Because you thought it was real.
Another one is the opening of Scream. She's literally making Jiffy Pop popcorn to go and watch a scary movie. And while she's getting these phone calls, it keeps popping back, if you will, popping back to the popcorn. So it's starting to get that little bit bigger. Cuts to her again, cuts back to the popcorn. It's big. It's starting to become overwhelming.
Passed.
Time has passed. Now the popcorn is on fire.
Because she hasn't tended to it.
She can't tend to weird. It.
That's... We can't do every scene. Yeah. No. I get it. Yeah. And you've written It, the fortune cookie scene. Which, is that It 1 or It 2?
Yeah, the first one.
Yeah, was it? Yeah, right. Weren't they old in that one though?
Oh, sorry. It's the second one.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, it's the second one. Yeah, I like that bit as well. Like, yeah. All the shit comes out of the pop. The
that was fantastic.
Popcorn, the fortune cookies. I put one in here. One is mine from 7, when the guy that he makes eat spaghetti until he pops.
Oh.
Do you remember that? You remember 7?
That's your spaghetti policy.
Yeah. But you remember 7?
Yes, I remember 7.
Brad Pitt and all that. But one of the things, the gluttony one, is a giant fat man, and then it shows like he makes him continually eat spaghetti out of a can and then kicks him in the side and it pops his like side out.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, that was the one. That was one of the kills. Like, and I always remember that. I was just like, man, I'm mad. Because you know how fucked you feel when you've eaten too much?
Yes.
Imagine someone's just forcing you to continually eat.
Yeah.
Like home in
yeah,
with
the donuts.
Yeah, but like, yeah, imagine that, what that would feel like. That would be the worst death.
Yeah.
Eating, force fed to death. And all those like old films are like they're force feeding or documentary old hospital fucking routines where they like put funnels or when they have to pump stomachs and shit like that. That's like reverse eating. But like, yeah, that shit's fucking gross. Like, but yeah, 7 is like that scene, the gluttony one is all about.
I really don't remember that.
Fucked.
Yeah, and
it's
cool.
Just like for a horror, I was going to put on my list, but I'm like, it's only one very small scene that you've all forgotten. Like,
yeah, but that's where it becomes a memorable food scene. So we've also got the pizza scene in A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, where he's like, you know, all the cheeses are the souls and eats the meatball.
Yeah, he stabs it into the head.
We've got the Ram Dom sequence from Parasite. Still to this day, I want to eat the fuck out of that.
I've never seen Parasite.
Oh, you should. It's a great film. You know, we've got the cotton candy cocoons from Killer Clowns.
What were they doing? Were they taking them to become cotton candy? What did they do to the people? I can't remember.
So they cocoon them in the cotton candy, which is basically like a spider cocooning.
It's, yeah. And then what do they do? They eat them.
They eat them.
Yeah, they liquefy. Yeah. So that's a very...
We've got my
favorite.
They're
people.
It's people. Cotton candy. We've got the Cheddar Goblin advert from Mandy. I love that. I love the Cheddar Goblin. It's so gross. And then, of course, we've got the Art Crispy cereal from Terrifier 2, the sequence with the little boy, and he's sitting there, they're doing
the advert.
And he's like chewing away. I love a fake advert.
I still haven't watched all that yet.
Finish it, man.
I forgot.
Finish it.
There's always going to be like heaps of scenes in films like that revolve around. I'm trying to think of ones that aren't there. All I could think of was 7 off the top of my head. But yeah, food. It's gross and we love eating it.
We do. We do. There's a couple of other films that we can mention very, very quickly. We've got The Ginger Dead Man, which I've never seen.
I don't
even think it's on my to-watch list. I'll get to it if I get to it.
I wanted to mention like Sweeney Todd, like the Tim Burton remake with a fucking Marla Singer from Fight Club, his wife.
Yep, Helena Bonham Carter.
And was it Johnny Depp?
Yeah.
And musical, and, you know, they make the pies out of the people, and there's the whole thing about the pies. That is nearly, I know, but he's more about, it's more about haircuts.
Yeah. We've also got a Tasmanian film called Dying Breed, which Lee Whannell's in it, 2008, which is a very similar one about people in pies.
People in pies.
Motel Hell. Most of these are like cannibalism sort of films.
What's the one where they cook cats in the pies? What film's that? And it's got like those kittens. Oh.
That's Young Einstein.
Young Einstein, yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. So,
yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. Australian film there. Mm-hmm. Yahoo Serious.
Yep. Oh, man, that's a throwback.
Yeah, he kidnaps the cat pie. Yeah. He's running down the road with the cat pie. Oh, and it has that scene I always remember with the kittens, and they just fucking dump the dough onto these actual kittens into the pie.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Core memory unlocked there as well, man. Jesus Christ. You know, we've got Ice Cream Man from 94. We've done an episode on Motel Hell.
That could have been up there, but, like, we've done an episode on it. Like, yeah. That was Ice Cream Man is a lot about the ice cream, about the flavors, and and it always shows like there's cockroaches in there, and that doesn't really make sense, but like, and it's all about he's all about the ice cream recipes and stuff like that. That is very food based horror.
That's right. We've got Fresh, which was another 2022 release, and that again is about harvesting people for food, but for high end clientele. It's also a really good film. It's on Disney Plus if you want to check it out.
Yeah, there is a lot of cannibal stuff in it.
Yeah. Raw 2016, this was like a really good film. So this young vegetarian girl, she goes off to veterinary school and she's hazed. She's then forced to eat meat and she then gets the hunger and she then craves meat and goes on from there. Delicatessen, which we mentioned earlier, 91. Neither of us had seen it in a while, but it is a French film and not French extremist, but French weirdness.
What's his name?
Yeah, we've also got Cooties 2014. This is food based because the whole film revolves around the tainted chicken nuggets.
It's all about chicken nuggets, but not enough to be in the real list.
There's a couple on my watch list. Dumplings 2004, which you previously talked about,
on the platform.
A 2022 film called Flux Gourmet, which is very similar to The Menu but more artistic cult vibe than Eat the Rich kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the final one on my list is a 1963 Japanese film called Matango, Attack of the Mushroom People.
Oh, yeah.
So,
they're massively into their fungies as like things, and they're like those big tall mushrooms.
Yeah.
They're mostly stem.
Stem, yeah. So I'm really interested to watch this.
They'd call them stem. I think that's just part of the mushroom.
Yeah, I think so. So that'll pretty much do us for this episode. So, you know, everyone always lets us know what their favorite films are or if we've missed anything, which I love. I love hearing.
Yeah.
Because half the shit goes on my watch list, which
We might do an episode about then as well.
Yeah.
So, and this week is like the Bonfire Horror Club for the Babadook. South Australian film made.
Babadook.
South Australian Film Corporation made that one. Not really in South Australia they didn't make it, but like, which is weird.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's not set. It's like, it's clearly like Melbourne or something. Like, it's like in the hilly suburbs of like another, maybe? Or might be, I might be wrong.
So.
You think it is Adelaide somewhere?
It's made in Adelaide, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm really keen to watch this again on the big screen.
Yeah, it's a good film, hey?
Definitely.
Never jumps the shark, which is great.
No, never. I tried to find the book to give away as a prize, and then I found out how much the book is worth, and I was like, fuck you people, you don't.
As in like a prop, or did
they made the pop-up book for a while. Like, they did a very small run of the pop-up book.
You wish you'd got that, didn't
you? And I wish I'd gotten it, but yeah, I was like, fuck
it. Is it like in the Hunge 80s and stuff like that?
It's a bit higher than that.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Just for the book.
Yeah. So
it's not a very good book anyway. It's not as good as I Want My Hat Back, which is the best children's book in the world.
I don't know. Now, Go to Fuck the Sleep is another good one.
Yeah, but that's not a real one. I Want My Hat Back is, and it's awesome.
Okay. Do you want to take us out?
Yeah, so we'd like to thank all the people that interact with us over the course of the times on the social medias. You can tell I wasn't.
Like, God, we're crotchety old men.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, people like the Neither Noose, and we'd like to thank all our tribe, like the, what's better than a word than a tribe? Our cult. Our cult of the Bonfire Club, Palace Nova, Underground Records, Vicious Video, Galactic Video, Greenlight Comics, The Candle One.
Black match candles.
Was it? But
black match.
Black match candles. So I forgot to write that down in my notes.
That's fine.
Also, people.
We love people. I don't. I'm not good with them, but tribe, I like them.
Our cultists. Mm. The cultists. We should. Yeah, let's write that down. Let's keep that as like the
cult.
The Terrorvision cult members.
Yeah.
Your Terrorvision cult members out there, like Chris Franks, William, Ian Westwood. What a cult member.
Cripsy.
Robert Thomas, Tsunami Hija, Adam Gillespie, Patrick Roberts, Dion, Bryn. Always thank Bryn. He steps in for me when I'm not around, which is all the time now. And I'm about to have another baby as well, so dang.
Yeah. Surprise, Jan's having another baby.
Oh yeah. So
everyone.
I'm gonna get even more busier than being 110% busy.
Yeah. You're now gonna be 120%.
No, I'm gonna have to cut stuff out of my life.
Yeah. Not this.
No. No, this is easy.
Yeah.
Everything I'd say that to, that everything I'm doing now, I need to keep on. What am I going to get rid of? Damn.
Yep. Yep. It's all right. But yeah. And also, we thank our mums. We love our mums.
Yeah. And my dad made it this. Old Billy McGinnis for coming in and helping me out and put the bins out the other day.
Oh, fuck yeah.
He loves putting the bins out.
Yeah. It's a dad thing.
Yeah. And he loves getting on the roof and cleaning the gutters out, even though he shouldn't because he is like clinically blind.
Sure.
And he's old and he keeps falling over and hurting himself, but he persists. Where's Dad? Where is he? He's on the roof, isn't he? And you go out and he's on the roof. Like, get off. You're going to fall off.
Oh, anyhow, bless him.
So you've been listening to Terror Vision Horror Podcast with Dan and Jennifer. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram and at terrorvision.pod. That's the handle. And that's it.
Yeah. May all your dreams be nightmares. We'll be right back.